This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Stocks have seen a robust rally on Wall Street as we approach the end of the year. There's been a little give back this week, but it's nothing compared to the solid gains added last month. The big question, where do we go from here? I'm Andy Gersher, and this is Gains. All right, let's bring on Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Jim, always great to have you on the Gains podcast.
Always great to join you, Andy. Thanks for having me on.
We often bring you on the show to take a more technical look at stocks, and that's where I want to start today. We've really saw this monster rally in November, and as mentioned in the lead, I mean, it's been a little softer this week, but I mean, those big gains were put in place. So just kind of start there. Where have we been? Where are we going? What's the technical read?
Well, as you know, Andy, in late October, I thought the S&P was likely making a bottom when it dropped below 41.50. The market was oversold. Sentiment was incredibly negative. As you recall, I'm sure, the 10-year Treasury yield was pushing up against 5%. People were talking about, oh my goodness, it's going to 5.5%, 6%. So the conditions were ripe, I felt, for Treasury yields to come down. And I recommended Treasury bonds back in late October, specifically TLT, which is the Treasury bond ETF. And as a result, I thought with rates coming down, the stock market would have ample reason to rally. And I thought the S&P could rally above 4,500. And we're approaching, I think, a crossroads. And the market is kind of going to dictate, Andy, and tell us what's coming next, whether we're just going to have a modest correction followed by another rally that potentially could take the S&P to a new all-time high, or a correction that looks a little bit more ominous that would suggest that this rally is pretty much done. I'm kind of on the fence right now because the market is very overbought. Sentiment has switched really significantly. The American Association of Individual Investors, the percent of bulls, rose to the highest level, I think, in a couple of years. Bears have dropped. So we've seen a complete 180, Andy, and all the reasons why the market was likely to make a low, very negative sentiment, very oversold, those conditions have been replaced by just the opposite. So I think we're at a pause, and the rally in the last couple of weeks has been, I think, built on a false premise regarding what the Fed will be doing early next year. But, you know, we can talk about that if you would like.
Well, and then you talk about some of the fundamentals beyond the charts, and the Fed is clearly one of them. So let's start there.
Yeah. Well, Wall Street is at this stage of the game looking for the economy to avoid a recession. Earnings are going to be up about 11% next year. And on top of it, and for good measure, the Federal Reserve is going to start cutting the funds rate starting in March. And by the end of next year, we'll have cut the funds rate 5 times. So if you adhere to that narrative, it really doesn't get much better than that. That's like Nirvana cubed. And that's why the market has been pushing, I think steadily, especially over the last week or two since the last inflation report, and why selling pressure has remained so muted. And that's one of the reasons why, Andy, we're not really seeing much of a pullback, because if you have that bullish of an outcome, why would you want to be a seller? And so to me, this, I'm going to say fantasy, but this narrative, I think, can hold up until the Fed has its meeting next Wednesday, December 13th, and then Chair Powell does his press conference. I think he's going to push back on that whole premise.
A lot of traders on Wall Street think the Fed has, mission complete, mission accomplished here. They've even talked about lowering rates. But yeah. Has the Fed accomplished what they were set out to do? Is there still more work? It seems like inflation is quelling some.
Yeah, no question inflation is coming down. It will come down more over the next 6 to 9 months, just much more gradually than what we've seen over the last 12 months. But the thing I keep pointing to, Andy, is the overall tightness in the economy and also in the labor market. So, the Fed has more than just one variable that it looks at. So is it good that inflation has come down? Absolutely. It means the Fed will have to do far less. And I think the Fed very well may be done in terms of rate increases. I think where Wall Street is wrong is assuming that the Fed will begin to cut rates in March and then aggressively before the end of next year. And the reason being is twofold. Corporate America, in the wake of the financial crisis and up until the pandemic, had virtually no pricing power. So what that meant was companies would compete against each other based on price. If I'm trying to steal market share from you, Andy, I'm going to try to undercut your prices, which that obviously puts a lid on the pricing within the goods and services. The pandemic came along. The government gave consumers a few trillion dollars. There were supply shortages, material costs, as we saw, like energy zoom up significantly. And companies were then able to raise pricing power or raise prices without getting any blowback and resistance from consumers, because consumers had the money and they were happy to spend it to get what they wanted after going through a pandemic. What's happened in the last year, Andy, is we've seen supply chain pressures ease significantly. Material costs, like looking at energy, have come down a lot. But yet many companies in many sectors still have pricing power and they're not getting pushback. So we're seeing companies continue to raise prices. And the only thing that will bring and turn that around is if we see demand weaken enough so that then companies are forced to compete based on price and begin to compete with each other. And I think one variable that I'm looking at is called capacity utilization. It just shows, what amount of capacity is being utilized. Last month, it was over 78%. Historically, whenever we've had a significant slowdown, it's dropped, low 70s, even down to the mid 60s. I think the Fed doesn't want that outcome, but I think a decline in capacity utilization down to around 76% would give the Fed confidence that once they do cut rates and the economy enters the next expansion, pricing power won't return quickly, and therefore inflation will remain more subdued for a longer period of time. Wall Street, no one's talking about this. I think if I'm on the Fed, I'm looking at, well, what's going to happen to inflation in 2025 if we do, in fact, cut rates in 2024? That would be one of the concerns I think the Fed would have, and it's why I don't think the Fed is going to be cutting rates as early as Wall Street expects and as aggressively.
Well, it doesn't make sense. I mean, they just got a handle on inflation. Do you think that this rally is totally based on Wall Street actually feeling that they're going to cut rates?
I think initially it was based on the Fed is done.
Yeah, I think that's where that's my read on it was yep. The Fed is done here and we're going to keep these rates at this elevated level and the market and the businesses in America yep. can kind of work around this. And I thought there was some underlying strength. Now, there is a little concern about the actual consumer eventually running out of the money that they had built up before. But I totally don't read this as the Fed's going to now, you know, do an about face and start cutting rates. I think some on Wall Street are. I'm wondering how many really feel that, or if it's more of, okay, we've stopped and that's good and it's a wait and see. I mean, how does that all square up with things? Because it's hard to think what other people are thinking as well.
Yeah, I just think, Andy, Wall Street has been myopically focused on inflation. Understandably so. Inflation is at a 40-year high. It's been coming down. And so for Wall Street, it seems, their focus is only on inflation as a determinant of monetary policy. So as inflation continues to drop, gets below 3% at some point in time, both on the PCE core and the CPI core, Wall Street thinks that that's all the Fed needs to cut rates. And my point has been is you have to look at capacity utilization and things like pricing power. You also have to look at the unemployment rate. Yeah, the JOLTS survey came out today. We're showing things easing a bit more. But if you look at over the last 20 years, it's still really high. The unemployment rate's at 3.9%. So that's the other area that I think the Fed wants to see more slack develop. In other words, higher unemployment. The year-over-year increase in October, based on the Atlanta Fed wage tracker, 5.2%. Again, if we go back to 2010 to 2020, most of those years, particularly between 2010 and 2016, wages were growing at 3.5% or closer to 3%. And then as the labor market tightened in 17, 2018 and 19, wage growth accelerated up to about 3.5, 3.75. So my point is at 5.2, wages are still growing and they're going to come down. I mean, companies aren't going to keep giving people wage increases. So that is going to continue to unwind. It's an annual rate of change, but it isn't, agreeable, if you will, with the idea that, yeah, okay, let's cut interest rates. And the unemployment rate's only 4% or 4.1% because the demand for labor will kick up early in the next expansion. And all of a sudden, we're going to have people bidding, companies bidding again for workers, and wages are going to start to move up, which will make it more difficult. Not so much that inflation doesn't get down towards the 2.5% next year, Andy. Again, I think the Fed's focus is 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, I'm there with you. I cannot see them doing an about face, especially we have corporate profits are holding up. There's a real tight labor market right now, but this notion, plus those are tools that the Fed has in the toolbox, and you use them when we see a meaningful downturn. So keeping rates at this level, letting inflation, letting everything kind of adjust to this new norm in interest rates, because the things that drive market are inflation, interest rates, and corporate profits. I kind of lean to the bullish side here a bit on the fundamental side because there's a lot of good things.
Well, again, in the near term, the momentum of the market has been very positive and strong. And so I think the more likely outcome is we get a modest pullback. And then, especially if I'm right, and Powell pushes back against the idea of the Fed cutting rates early next year, and then when you get Fed governors giving speeches, because they're in a blackout period, so they can't give any speeches. I think after the next meeting on December 13th, I'm guessing we're going to hear a number of the Fed governors talk about, that they're not ready yet. They think the, and Williams actually made this comment last week, who's the New York Fed, that he is in favor of not raising the funds rate more, but he believes it needs to stay at a restrictive level for an extended period of time. And I just think Powell's going to push back on that. If I'm right, we'll see Treasury yields tick higher. I think the market pulls back. And then I think going into next year, there's likely going to be another push higher before this rally is complete.
Give us levels. Give us numbers, Jim. We talk about a technical look. Give us the levels you're watching here. What, when you say we'll get a pullback and then go, higher, maybe the retest the highs, what are key levels in the sand you're watching?
Well, one of the targets on the S&P for a pullback is 44.21. There's a gap there, a rather large gap. And historically, the S&P, when it creates gaps, it also fills gaps. So that's an obvious target for the S&P to pull back to before the next move higher. If it that pullback, Andy, and this is going to get a little wonky, is an ABC, in other words, a down-up-down pattern.
Yeah, and explain that. On the wonky stuff, let's explain it to the Gaines listener, so we don't leave anybody in the dust here. Okay. Explain. What exactly do you mean by that?
Okay, corrections against the primary trend are three waves. So if you're in an uptrend, a pullback will be a down, up, down pullback. And then you're going to rally to a higher high. Trend reversals are kind of noted when the pullback isn't a down, up, down, but instead of a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if this pullback to 44.21 happens and it turns out to be a 5-wave decline, to me, that would be pretty bearish. I'm anticipating it to be more likely a 3-wave pullback that will then be followed by another push into early next year. Because unless we get definitive data showing that the economy is slowing materially, Wall Street is going to continue to hold on to this narrative that the economy's fine, earnings are going up, and the Fed is definitely not going to raise rates. And then it's just a question of when they start cutting. I mean, they can tolerate if it's not March, okay, then it for sure will be May. So I think the overall story remains intact. I think Powell will push back against it, causes a pullback, and then another leg up into early January. It's at that point in time, and that could entail the S&P getting above 4,800. So at a minimum, it should get above 4,607, which was the high we saw in late July. So, but my overarching view is once this rally is complete, I think the market's going to be vulnerable to a fairly significant decline, whether it's from a new all-time high.
How much?
Something.
Well, how much room do you, when you say this rally? So we got this rally. Is it already petered out now, or is there a little more room? What's the level on the top side that you're kind of looking at?
Well, I think near term we're near a high. I think the market can hold up between now and Fed Day next week because people have this view that the Fed's going to be pretty compliant. I think Powell's going to push against that so that will cause a pullback. And then I think the market's going to rally again to higher highs, whether that's just to 4,650 or 4,800. I don't know. It could go to 5,000. I need to see the nature of the pullback. As I said, if it's three waves down to 44.21, then I think an attack on the all-time high is 48.18 is likely.
Are you optimistic on the fundamentals? We talked about the technical. Yeah. I've mentioned a couple of reasons why I just think, over the next year, stocks look still very attractive, and I could totally see them at least retesting those highs. Do you see the same positive fundamentals that I do?
No. I continue to believe that the economy in the first half of next year is going to slow materially with a good chance that we'll see at least one quarter of negative GDP growth. So I think this rally to whatever the price level that the S&P reaches early next year will represent a fairly significant high. And then I believe the economy is going to surprise a lot of people who don't think we're going to have a recession by slowing enough to raise concerns. Well, maybe we're going to have a recession after all. So instead of earnings going up 11%, potentially, if things slow enough, earnings growth might actually be negative next year. And that's
wow. So that's so coming. You think on the ground, a lot of things are going to turn around and real quick. As far as you mentioned, you know, corporate profits have held up. Yep. You think that may reverse? You think there's some fundamentals underneath here? When what is
What's
the biggest?
It?
Yeah, what yeah. is driving such a you know well, a possible downturn for the economy?
Okay. So if you look at Fed policy, the Federal Reserve increased the funds rate by 500 basis points. It's the largest, quickest increase in the last 40 years. Banks increased their lending standards more aggressively than at any other time in the last 40 years. So if one wants to assume that the huge increase in interest costs is not going to have any bearing on economic growth, I don't agree with that view. Just that simple.
So you don't think a lot of this this newer norm has already been baked into the market some?
Well, again, what we're seeing is on underneath the surface, Andy, we're starting to see some fraying happening. We're seeing rising delinquency rates for auto, credit card debt. The number of bankruptcies in the first 10 months of this year were higher than they were a year ago. And this is supposedly when the economy is still growing at a 2-2.5% clip, and you have a big increase in bankruptcies. So there's something underneath the surface. Corporate, commercial real estate, I think that's going to be a real problem. Now, it may not really blow up until the second half of next year, but I think that's a simmering problem.
I see that problem. I've been talking about that for years. I'm yep. staring at an empty downtown, and I wonder, my question all along, and nobody ever talks about this, is who's holding the bag on all this? When is the debt for some of these buildings no longer going to be serviced because people are just, why rent a huge office if you don't even need it?
Need it.
And I know that takes some time, so I agree with you there. Yeah. That's
the
big one.
The national occupancy rate is 50%. So what the trigger comes for all these buildings is when the loan comes due, and I think it's I can't remember if it's
Why haven't we seen that factored in so far in the markets? That's why I keep thinking, well, maybe this come to Jesus moment for commercial real estate is still a little farther out. You think that's coming very soon as well?
I think it's coming over the next 12 months to enough to become a problem because we're going to see landlords walk away from buildings. Banks aren't going to renew loans. The terms of any loans they would make are going to be pretty ugly. And so I just think commercial real estate in terms of office space and apartments is another area that is going to be, not as problematic, but a problem that I think by the end of next year, these problems are going to be far more pronounced and they're cause some dislocations. The other thing, Andy, when the economy slows, typically what happens is problems come out of the woodwork. In other words, weak hands are able to hang in there as long as the economy's chugging along because they got enough revenue coming in to kind of, keep the boat afloat. If the economy slows materially, all of a sudden a lot of smaller businesses and consumers get pushed off the edge. If the unemployment rate rises to 4.5%, before the end of next year, we're going to see more supply in terms of housing prices. Well, I kind of think that even if mortgage rates come down by the end of next year, which is very likely, at the same time housing prices are falling and more supply shows up, I just don't think that's a real positive for consumer spending. So,
you make an extra interesting point. We've always heard about rising tides lift all boats.
Yep.
And then, you mentioned, some of those hanger-oners, and you don't know until the tide goes out. And that's only when the tide goes out, you discover right. who's been swimming naked. And that kind of that kind of ties to what you're saying. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's an option for you. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesday mornings. We will be right back with Jim after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
Back with Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at macrotides.com out of San Diego. Before we get started here, talking about maybe how to play this a little bit, couple moves, Jim, give the special offering for the Gains listener.
Well, I'm working on the December macro tides issue that'll be ready to go out early next week. And, of course, I do a weekly technical review every Monday. So if somebody sends me an email, Jim Welsh Macro, and mentions the Gains podcast, I'm more than happy to send one of those two issues out so you get a better idea of the analysis that I do and an overview of the over economy in the markets.
And Welsh is spelled W-E-L-S-H.
You got it.
All right.
I like the grape juice, like the nationality, even though I am an Irishman.
Ah, there you go.
From the south side of Chicago, I was.
Yes, so. we often, off air, we joke about the Chicago connection all the time. Love that Jim's from our neck of the woods. So now, how do you play this all? How's this all going to square out? You kind of gave us some levels and what's behind why you're concerned about some weakness going forward. How do you play this end of this year going into next year?
You're right. So I recommended taking some money off the table last week when the S&P was at 4550, just because I thought the upside was somewhat limited. If the S&P corrects in three waves down to that 4421 or below, that will be a buying opportunity for a trade going into early next year. And in terms of treasury yields, I think treasury yields, the 10-year next year by mid next year will drop to under 350. So in the near term, I think we're going to see, as I said earlier, Powell push back against the idea that the Fed's going to be cutting rates aggressively next year. I think that causes treasury yields to tick up a little bit. And then at the same time, I'm kind of like the same pattern with the S&P. A three-wave pullback in treasury bond yields then provides another buying opportunity. I think TLT next year, Andy, it's trading around 94. I think potentially it trades up to the 105, 109 level in the first half of next year. Again, if I'm right about the economy slowing materially, pension funds and insurance companies are going to trip over themselves wanting to lock in some high yields. In terms of gold, I think gold next year will trade above 2,300. Now, near term, yesterday's reversal, where it dropped $100 between Sunday night trading and yesterday, raises a question as to whether or not gold might drop below 1812 before it takes off again. So, right now, if gold drops below about 2,000, Andy, that will start to increase the odds of a drop below 1812.
Long term, I'm very, very bullish on gold because some of the things that we're talking about with debt and everything involved there, And it seems like gold has really been held back for quite some time. I'm surprised it hadn't moved. Some different events that have occurred over the last 3-4 years, including during the pandemic and some of that stuff. Yep. Gold really never performed like it had promised during some of these times. But it seems like that's one thing that I'm super bullish on is gold long term. It seems like you are too.
I am. I'm just trying to fine tune the near term. Again, yesterday's key reversal day, in other words, gold went to an all-time high and then dropped $100. So to me, that suggests that, all right, gold may not quite be ready to really blow through and get above 2150 or and really keep running. So near term, I'm just waiting for the price pattern to evolve. You know, one of the reasons that really held gold back over the last few years, Andy, in spite of the high inflation, was dollar strength. So in June of 2021, the dollar was trading around 90. I thought it would rally up to 100. It did last October. I thought the dollar was topping when it was trading up near 114. It would drop to about 105. And I thought that if that took place, we would see gold rally. We would also see treasury yields come down and the stock market rally. So the dollar has been a big influence in the last 2-3 years on what's happening with gold. So I think at some point in time next year, the dollar is going to drop below 99 and potentially get closer to 95. Near term, I think there's a bounce likely going into the end of the year, which is why gold might kind of stay under wraps for a while. But if I'm right about the economy weakening significantly, Andy, I think the dollar, which has benefited from both the U.S. economy performing better than a lot of the other major nations and, you know, the Fed's bias and raising of interest rates, I think if the economy really slows, obviously, at some point in time, the Fed will respond by cutting rates in the face of, you know, real weakness in the economy. And I think that undermines the dollar. So that's one of my expectations, is that if everything falls in line regarding the economy, the dollar should have a period of pronounced weakness. And that really will open the door for gold to really take off.
And then on the international stock front, since we're talking dollar weakness, what's your feeling on international stocks exposure outside domestic markets?
Well, if the dollar has a rebound over the next handful of weeks and stays below 107.34, that was the most recent high, and then begins to roll over, signaling that, that decline below 100 has begun, I would look at emerging market equities and emerging market bonds, because they typically do much better when the dollar's weakening. There's a lot of emerging market debt that's priced in dollars. Well, when the dollar goes up, it's more and more expensive for emerging market companies to service their debt. When the dollar comes down, it makes it much easier. If I'm right about U.S. Treasury yields coming down, we'll also see bond yields around the world come down, including the emerging markets. So the key to that whole trade is obviously the path of the dollar. As I said, near term, I think the dollar can tick a little bit higher into the first part of the year. But ultimately, if I'm right about the economy, Andy, it's going to roll over. And when it does, that'll be the time to look at emerging market debt as well as emerging market stocks.
All right. We've covered a lot of ground here. What's the final takeaway? What is, you know, a key play for the Gains listener as well?
Well, again, Wall Street has staked out bets that the Fed is going to aggressively cut rates starting in March. I think that's completely unlikely. So historically, when Wall Street gets surprised or has misjudged something important, like their expectation for Fed policy, the market usually has a negative reaction because it's, you know, been looking, it's been running up in anticipation of all this good news. And if one of that is taken, one of those things are taken away, I think there's some disappointment. So that to me is the key point. The Fed is not going to cut rates 5 times next year if the economy doesn't go into a recession. not going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. Big thanks to Jim Welsh, macro strategist and portfolio manager at MacroTides.com in San Diego. Hey, be sure to subscribe, follow, and leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. I've been told that's podcast gold. And as always, subscribe and turn on those notifications so you know when a new Gains episode drops. We drop Gains episodes on Wednesdays. Next week, we are talking crypto and Bitcoin. We called the bottom here on the Gains podcast. We have a forecast for a price that's a lot higher than it is right now. And we're going to talk all about it. Our Bitcoin and crypto call is firmly in place, and we will talk about that next week. And I will see you then.
A News Radio WBBM podcast, powered by Odyssey.